Welcome back, everybody.
What came up in your breakout rooms? Pat?
Catherine. Maybe this is a summary, Dave, because this today was simply a replay of the remarkable breakthrough conversations that keep happening in these breakout groups. There is some level this morning of such honesty and availability between three minds that we knew each other. I think at the levels, I don't know if it's of sanctity, but certainly we had brushed past any smaller definitions of who we were to the things that were really important. Thank you, Dave, for setting it up, for giving us this container to discover God in ourselves and each other.
Thank you. And yes, of course, it's sanctity. And what you're describing when you say how it all came together, that is grace. That's how it works.
Catherine has a question.
Okay, and then Vivian. Vivian, did you have your hand up? Okay. Catherine?
Hi. Well, it's Michael, but that's okay. You can call me Catherine. I just want to say you have graced us so much, Dave. And you graced us today. I love your description of grace. And I see it's here. It's in your book toward the latter part. So thank you very much for that. And in our group, we brought up at least three things you've graced us with before. The five things you cannot change. I say yes. and then you have it in your book here too, the expanding circle of I wish the best for those I love and expanding out to the whole world. So those are just wonderful, simple, but powerful thoughts you've shared with us. And I want to just thank you for that.
Reminders.
Reminder.
For the last 5 or 6 years, or how many years you've been coming to Word and Life in May?
Yeah, Alice and I were trying to figure it out, but at least 20.
Well, and we need to have reminders. We need to have things repeated so that they sink in eventually.
Yeah.
I've got a question. Oh, sorry, somebody was before me, I think.
Vivian, did you have a question? Hold it one sec. You want to unmute, Vivian?
Yes, I unmute now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead. And then more.
My question is about where does evil come from, you know, because it somehow I can very much connect with the Buddha nature and the Christ nature and so on. But in that sense, where does evil come from?
We would have to recognize that we all have a shadow side.
Yeah, we know, but we do.
It's like a coin with two sides, and good and evil are in us. And some people act on that dark side. And hopefully we won't be doing that. But it's a potential in everyone. It's just in our DNA.
Oh, I see. There's, I guess we have to surrender to the why, you know.
We would give up the why and just say, oh, let me remain aware that I'm a combination of opposites, and any evil I see in other people could also be in me.
Yeah.
It helps be compassionate.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Vivian. Mara?
Thanks, Dave, for this. I have two questions. Maybe I'll just ask one. With this whole dualism that we grew up with, you know, projecting the divine out there, and you're inviting us to integrate the divine inside of us. But I'm thinking that we have institutionalized religion to reflect back to us dualism. You know, like we have this massive infrastructure of religion to reflect that dualism, and that we're, you know, that God's up here and we're down here. And so as we make this move to integrating the divine within us and being our own guardian angels, theoretically, you know, I look out the window and I don't, it's harder to see that institutional framework reflecting that back, because it just challenges that, you know, as does say capitalism and other things along those lines. So I think it's that relationality. I think we're looking for this witness or the support. Maybe that's what I'm talking about, or, you know, something. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, it certainly does. And yeah, you have to be looking for like souls who can join you in this wonderfully mystical approach to things. And you did remind me of a kind of humorous statement from Carl Jung. The purpose of institutionalized religion is to make sure that you don't become religious. They want to keep it in the category of we'll tell you what to do and we'll be in control of you. And it's a, you know, usually a patriarchal system. So yeah, Jung says the purpose of institutionalized religion is to make sure you don't have a religious experience. That's the actual quote. And you know, it's something to look at. We're not blaming anybody. We're not turning against any church. We're just becoming more aware that there's another way to be religious and to be spiritual. And we're gonna gain everything we can from whatever church we're part of, but we're always gonna keep in mind that we have to be on, that we're always gonna be on the lookout to make sure it doesn't become dualistic again. It's a big task. Okay, Yolanda?
Thank you.
Honoring the confidentiality of the breakout room, I just want to mention that we are all in agreement that this book right now is one of the graces right now, and of course the author too. And I had also want to say that this book seems to be talking, like, to me or to everybody individually, like it was so spirit-filled that it didn't matter whether a person's IQ or academic background or spiritual level or spiritual maturity is high. In other words, it's talking to all levels. And I'm now eye impaired, so it's hard for me to be reading books that are so dense. And I must admit that you have written books that are also so dense, David. But this one seems to be like talking to each and every one of us. And I just found out in our break room that we are all, you know, talking about this. It also, while reading this, I also remember Bob Bearing. And Bob Bearing is one of your fans. And the very, I remember that he, in the Facebook, he had asked to friend him. When you ask for a friend. So even when he is already dead, during his birthday, I wish him a happy birthday on Facebook. But I brought Bob Bearing because over here, there's a thing, it's somewhere here, there is a passage that you do your best. And you quoted the speech of Fred Rogers when he won.
Mr. Rogers.
And Bob Bearing says, David is like David Rico is like Fred Rogers. So we all have different ways of reaching out as being conduit of the grace of God to everyone. And one of the takeaways in this book is that when you said you do your best, that's all you can do, and then let the grace of God take over. So yes.
Lacking. That's another way grace works. It makes up for what's missing. Thank you, Yolanda. Alice, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I do. A common theme that arose in the chat room I was in, as far as being a grace in our life now, was the garden. Each one of us has said that being in our garden, being in nature, especially during this past year, has been a great grace and blessing because there's peace, such peace and beauty, and because it stirs up the desire to nurture, to plant seeds, to make sure the soil, our soil is prepared. It just, they were beautiful sharings on the great grace of nature. And to me, that is another way that the feminine rises up in situations and is able to bring peace and inspiration. So anyhow, I thought it was interesting that all three of us felt that the garden was a great grace. And of course, you can look at the whole big metaphor of garden, you know, which isn't necessarily out there, but the garden, you know, within. So anyhow, I thought that was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. That's a wonderful comment. And you're reminding me of a poem about this very topic by Wallace Stevens. He's a Connecticut poet. The only word in the poem you might not know is the name of a particular plant that is kind of it's a local plant in Connecticut, and you'll hear this word, and it just picture something that's kind of shaped like a liver, and I'll come back to it after. So the poem goes like this, and it's a combination of it's a contrast between nature and institutions, which are referred to as academies. And the plant is called hepatica. Hep, like a liver, looks like a liver. It feels good as it is, without the giant, the thinker of the first idea. Perhaps the truth depends upon a walk around the lake, a composing as the body tires, a stop to see hepatica, a stop to watch a definition growing certain, and a weight within that certainty, a rest in the swags of pine trees bordering the lake, at which a kind of Swiss perfection comes. Not balances that we achieve, but balances that happen as a man and a woman meet and love forthwith. Perhaps there are moments of awakening, extreme, fortuitous, personal, in which we more than awaken, sit on the edge of sleep as on an elevation, and behold the academies like structures in a mist. Says it all. And when he says balances that happen, that's grace. Not balances that we achieve, but balances that happen. You just feel balanced, that's grace. And he's saying this all happens in nature as you walk around the lake. Imagine having that belief. The truth depends upon a walk around the lake, rather than find out from the thinker of the first idea. The big shot will tell you what it's all about. The patriarchal academies. He's saying, no, don't go there. Take a walk around the lake and be with the pine trees and the unusual plants. That's where you'll find the balances. Okay, was there another question?
I just thought I'd pipe in real quick. I love the poem. Thank you. And it's Maura here. It seems too, you're speaking to the body. Like yes. The feelings are registered in the body, which of course traditional religion would tell us to not pay attention to the body. But the poet is telling us to pay attention to the body in nature and feel that. So that's another level of awareness, it seems, perhaps.
Very good point.
It's amazing.
And of course, as Alice said, having trust in nature, it's really trust in the divine feminine. Mm-hmm. So it's still religious. It's still deeply spiritual. This is not just scenery. What we're surrounded by is how the divine is present in our lives. Somebody else had something to share from what came up in your breakout rooms?
Yeah, this is Elaine.
Hi, Elaine.
Was it a distinction between the gifts of grace, which are the things that have been talked about just recently, and then that inner force or drive that propels us to overcome fear or anxiety. And I don't think there's any need to differentiate between them.
No.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, absolutely. No distinction. Mm-hmm. Gifts of grace and grace is all the same.
Okay. I've also.
And our part would be gratitude.
Mm. Gratitude for the gifts. I have, through my life, have just, you know, almost beaten myself up to say, come on, have the courage, move ahead. Don't be afraid. And I've confused that inner drive with my own inner strength, and somehow by now naming that propelling force within me as grace opens it up in a much healthier, wholesome way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also how you feel loved.
Mm-hmm.
That's what grace also tells you. Oh, look how much I'm loved that I was given a gift like this.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Well, we have a treat in store because we have been talking about grace, and now we have the wonderful grace of Gail and music, and of course the song that she's going to play for us is Amazing Grace. So, Gail? Beautiful. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
Well, we couldn't have had a more wonderful way to bring our series to a close. So thank you, Gail, and Judy, and Joe, and all of you. And let's just be in touch on the level of grace. Thank you.